Click on Art's webcam is, it's of Dusty and Abby, and they're obviously fighting some evil paper towels, which no doubt, at least in their little feline brains, attacked them, and so they're having their revenge. That occurred, I think that was last night, and it was funny. You just go out there and look, and you go, well, you can't say that on the radio. Speaking of radio, it is the hobby I indulge in much of the time when I'm not here. And you can get sort of a cute little sneak peek at ham radio by going to a place called smeter.net, www.smeter.net, S-M-E-T-E-R.net. Now, we've indulged in several RV trips. We've gone up to Reno and went up to Idaho, and so we've been having fun, you know, in this sort of semi-retirement. We've been having a blast, actually. However, on the last trip, I seem to have acquired acute bronchitis, which I'm now on the better side of, but if it sounds like I've got a cold tonight, that's because I do. Ramona's cold, of course, turned into asthma, so we've had quite a time of it for the past week or so. Tonight's program is going to center around UFOs. A very, very basic part of this program always has, or no, you know what? That's not true. It has not always been. But for many, many years now, it certainly has been one of the mainstays of the program. And in that spirit, I have for you on the website tonight two interesting pictures, actually videos, of recent UFOs. Now, the first one I found on the web, somebody sent me, and then I sent on to Lex to get it up there. It's from Bulgaria, and I think it's damn good, really good. And the reason I think it's so good is because it's an obvious UFO. In other words, it's not far away and fuzzy. It's close and very visible. And there are, you know, there's a field of reference there. There's a building in the forefront of this UFO. Therefore, you can assign to it some sort of scale, And I tell you, it's pretty good. So you might want to take a look at that one. The second one Lex found and put up, I don't think it's quite as good, only because it's taken from a pretty good distance. And I don't know about you, but I cannot make out the shape of the object in any detail, but it's still a good UFO photograph. The first one, though, the one from Bulgaria, I think that will knock your socks off a bit. It really is quite good. And tonight's guest, Stanton Friedan, of course, has been doing this as his life's work, that is to say, UFOs. So it's going to be a very interesting program tonight, and as a primer for it, I suggest you go to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at those and rate them, if you will, as I did. Again, the first object is close. You have a frame of reference, that is the building, for its size and where it is relative to everything, and so you can make a judgment about its size, and it's pretty damn big. The second one, farther away, doing some aerobatic stuff, and then, so I don't know. That one, as Stanton would be quick to say, would go in my gray box, but the first one, that's pretty good stuff, folks, so you might want to check it out. Coasttocoastam.com, it'll be right there, plastered upon the front page. Now, the Bell family has a few favorite TV shows. My favorite TV shows would be Medium. You seen that? Man, what a show. They're going to have a little bit of 3D, and I'm looking forward to 3D and high D. That should be something coming up this week. And then House. Have you seen House? My Lord, what a well-acted show. And then finally, oh, there is another good one, too. Gina, as Commander-in-Chief. Boy, she's very, very good. I really like that. So Medium, House, and Commander-in-Chief, just excellent stuff if you haven't checked them out yet. And then, since I'm in the world of TV, let me do a little bitching. One of my favorite TV shows in the past has been The Practice. Remember The Practice? Which has now become Boston Legal. Well, I want to raise a little hell here with the people who are doing this. This was, without a doubt, one of my favorite TV shows. James Spader, incredible, just incredible in the part, but he is being emasculated, in my opinion. The program itself is being emasculated. It presented some of the finest, sharpest, most controversial, suspenseful dramas I've ever seen on television. And that was during the time between when The Practice was going off and Boston Legal began. My God, it was a good show. And then, and James Spader, oh, just incredible. The bad guy, the attorney, the bad guy, but kind of a good guy, but a really a bad guy. And now it seems to me they've emasculated him. And the program itself. They have turned from the serious, the controversial, the dramatic, the gut-wrenching, to the frivolous, to the fluff, to the nothingness of regular TV. In fact, I suspect that they may have hired some of the people who became unemployed when Ally McBeal went belly up. I don't know, but I want it to change. I want it to go back to what it was. But it once was. So I wonder if anybody out there agrees with that. If you watch a TV show sort of as a almost not quite religious experience, mind you, but a sort of a thing that you do, and then it suddenly changes on you and becomes less and becomes sort of frivolous and mindless and drives me crazy. So the people from Boston Legal, I hope you're listening. So I think in the time we have available for calls this evening, when we get to it, both prior to and then once we take calls with the guest, we'll be devoted to UFOs. Now, not so much, Art, I got a story from when I was 13 or something like that, but if you've got a pretty recent sighting, I'd definitely like to hear about it. Taking a very brief look at the depressing news. Here you go. Suspect arrested in Washington Mall shootings. Gunman opened fire inside a busy shopping mall. Now, that's the way a lot of stories start out, isn't it? A gunman opened fire inside a busy shopping mall and wounded at least six people, took three others hostage in a music store before finally surrendering to a SWAT team. And these are just head shakers. You don't know why somebody does something like this, and you just shake your head. So I call them head shakers. White House doubts that El Zarqawi is dead among the dead. Let's see. Israeli leader reportedly leaving power. Oh, that's interesting. Israel's dovish Labor Party vowed Sunday to pull out Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's government. And Sharon reportedly decided to quit his Likud party to set up a new movement, beginning a campaign for elections expected perhaps in March. President Bush hails Mongolia for backing the Iraq war. That's good. We've got somebody, Mongolia. U.S. unprepared for super flu pandemic. The U.S. is unprepared, it says here, for the next flu pandemic, lacking the manufacturing capacity to provide 300 million doses, that's a bunch, of a vaccine for 3 to 5 more years. So in other words, it'll be 3 to 5 years before we can get the vaccine to give to anybody, and even then, we'll only have some. So they will have to make horrendous decisions about who shall receive the vaccine and who won't. I bet government workers, I bet they'll be right up there at the top. And then how do you suppose the list would then play out from there? Government leaders first, and then who? A NASA spacecraft is halfway toward Mars, where it is expected to collect more data on the red planet than all previous Martian explorations combined. The Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter successfully fired its six engines for 20 seconds last week. That adjusted the flight path in anticipation of a March arrival. It will fine-tune its trajectory perhaps two more times before it enters orbit about Mars. So maybe we'll find out more about Mars. The flu pandemic, very much on my mind, the potential flu pandemic. About 65,000 birds at a poultry farm in Fraser River Valley, British Columbia, are going to be slaughtered after a strain of bird flu was discovered in a duck there. However, this apparently is not the worst kind you can get, but nevertheless, 65,000 birds. And with regard to the bird flu, I think the even though we've got to keep an eye on it, it's very concerning. Until you hear about human-to-human transmission, I don't think there's a hell of a lot to worry about. I mean, of course, it's concerning, and it could jump species anytime, and that is the worry. But as long as it remains with the birds and out of human beings in a way that can spread from human to human, there's no reason for great concern. The moment you hear about human-to-human transmission, as in, you know, transmission of the flu, then you're going to have to decide what is best for you and your family. And one of those things is probably going to be, frankly, to isolate yourself from other human beings for a period of up to, I don't know, 6 months. Would that even do it? I think the 1918 flu circled the globe about three times before it stopped, or just pooped out, or whatever it is a flu does when it gets done. So I don't even know if that would be enough time. Well, get ready, brace yourself. The HARP experiment in Alaska is about to ratchet up the power to, I've heard, 4 billion watts. The ionosphere has been pretty ratty lately anyway, and we're all suspecting it has something to do with something other than normal conditions, though we are at the low of a sunspot cycle, and here they go. 4 billion watts, Continental, name of a company, said it is ahead of schedule in delivering 132 ultra-low-noise transmitters to U.S. government contractors, BAE Systems, for use in the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. That is the official name, by the way. Do you know that? HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. When the massive planar array for ionospheric research is completed in 2007, it's going to include a total of 180 Continental Electronics DG616G 10 kilowatt combined transmitters, which the company is upgrading specifically for HARP, said the supplier. Installation began in 93 with 18, 48 in 98, and will grow to 180. The final expansion will bring the HARP array to full power, with ERP increasing from 84 dBW to about 96 dBW. That's lots and lots of power, folks. And we've been watching HARP very carefully now. I've come to understand that DARPA is now mainly in control of the HARP project. And while we can certainly not say anything is specifically due to HARP, the shortwave conditions have been deplorable, and they're as easy to blame as anybody. Moreover, if HARP wasn't working, it seems to me the funding would have been cut. God knows we cut it for everything else, but instead HARP is getting the bucks, the transmitters, and they're going to go all the way to 4 billion watts. And again, I say if it wasn't working, if something about it was not performing as hoped, I guess we should put it that way, then they'd be cutting the funding, but they're not. What does that mean? It probably means it's working. Levels of carbon dioxide, from the Independent, of course, in the UK, levels of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere have jumped abruptly, raising fears that global warming may be accelerating now out of control. That little click we were all talking about. Measurements by U.S. government scientists show that concentrations of the gas, the main cause of the climate exchange, that's exchange, rose by a record amount over the past 12 months. It is the third successful year in which they have increased sharply, making an unprecedented triennial surge. Scientists are at a loss to explain why the rapid rise has taken place, but they fear it could show the first signs that global warming is now feeding on itself, with rising temperatures causing increases in carbon dioxide, which then go on to drive the thermometer even higher. That would be a deeply alarming development, suggesting that this self-reinforcing heating could spiral upwards beyond the reach of any attempts to combat it. The development comes as official figures show that Britain's emissions of the gas soared by 3% last year. That would be about twice as fast as the previous year. The increase caused by rising energy use and by burning less gas, more coal in power stations, jeopardizes that government's target of reducing emissions by 19% by 2010. And clearly it is changing our weather. Or clearly, I guess it would be fairer to say, our weather is changing. This from David. David says, "Hey Art, I thought I'd write and mention the odd weather we've been having in our neck of the woods, just the north shores of Lake Ontario, a town called Burlington. About 3 weeks ago, we began having very strong windstorms. I've lived in the area all my life, never seen anything this strength or duration. About 2 weeks ago, Hamilton, a city next to us, had a tornado. It was an F1, F2. Anyway, strong enough to rip the roof off a school and some other buildings. Many sheds and decks disappeared for good. Its path took it over the escarpment and into Lake Ontario." So be warned, the weather clearly is changing, as was demonstrated by Katrina, of course, in New Orleans. And speaking of New Orleans, spores, this was so predictable, right? Spores of airborne mold have become a hazard in New Orleans, where the cleanup's still going on and will be for some time now. Andrew Buncombe, I believe it is, writes in The Independent that the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, has accused the federal government of failing to warn people about the danger, much as they failed to warn New Yorkers about dangerous air pollution post-9/11. When the NRDC took air samples from 14 different locations in the New Orleans area, nine of which had been flooded, they discovered incredibly high levels of mold spores. Allergist says that an outdoor mold spore level greater than about 50,000 spores per cubic meter is dangerous, and the ones here are quite a bit above that. And then finally, in this area, my little area of the world, there is some interesting news. Former Hollywood madame Heidi Fleiss says that she is bound for a brothel in the southern Nevada desert that she says she's going to help remake into a resort featuring male prostitutes serving female customers. "I'm moving to Crystal," said Fleiss Wednesday, of a desert crossroads about 20 miles north of Pahrump, Nevada, and about 80 miles outside Las Vegas. It features two bordellos and very little else. That's Crystal, all right. "I'm going to open a stud farm," said Fleiss. "I'm going to have the sexiest men on earth. Women are going to love it," she says. Joe Richards, who owns the Cherry Patch Ranch and Mabel's Ranch in Crystal, said that he sent a courtesy letter Thursday to inform Nye County Commission that Fleiss is going to work for him, and apparent plans, you know, to open this new kind of bordello. "She's going to be Madame of Cherry Patch Ranch," said Richards. He told that to the Associated Press by telephone. So he calls her an employee as opposed to a partner, But I don't know. She got into some trouble a while ago. Our sheriff, Tony DeMeo, said that because Fleiss is a convicted felon, well, she might be banned from the county's legal sex trade. DeMeo sits with the five county commissioners on a six-member brothel licensing board. That is something legal way out here in my part of the desert. All right, we're going to take a break here. And as promised now, to your calls to remind you that Stanton Friedman will be here at the top of the hour. Perhaps Stanton could claim the title of the grandfather now of ufology. I'm not sure I'd have to think about that, but certainly he's very close to that. So it's going to be an interesting evening, and these things are with us all over our skies. Let's see what you have to say. Good evening. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, this is Chris from Evansville, Indiana. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Chris. And you?
Oh, pretty good. I saw that video you've got on your website.
Yes. Which one are you referring to? There's two of them.
It was the first one.
Okay, the one from Bulgaria.
Yeah, the one that was right, you could see the building in the foreground.
That's a pretty good one, isn't it?
It is. I saw one exactly like that. It was happened to be at night, though. I was driving with my girlfriend at the time, and it was a cloudy sky. Couldn't see any stars. It seemed like there was one star out there, and it turned bright red. Turned red. We thought a star exploded. But as soon as we were talking about that, it dropped straight down into the tree line. We couldn't see it anymore.
Hmm.
And then a few moments later, it popped right back up again. And by this time, we were kind of, on the edge of our seats, as you can imagine, I would guess.
I can imagine.
We were driving down the road, and it seemed to get larger and larger because it was coming towards us. And we got to our house, and it seemed to be over a field. So we got out of the car, and we ran to the closest field where we could see it. And it was the exact same shape up in the sky, the same altitude.
And it actually physically looked like the video we've got up there?
Yeah, completely like that.
Wow.
Except this was happened to be at night.
And you could, make out enough detail to tell that it looked like this one, because you can see detail in this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In the video, you could see kind of like a darker band in the front. Well, that was illuminated when I saw it. It was bright white. And it had on the bottom of it, there was a white circle.
All right. So, what do you think you saw? Do you think you saw an extraterrestrial craft? Do you think you saw a U.S. government operation? What do you think you saw?
Well, it hovered there for about 15 minutes, and then it shot off towards our airport.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I saw it, I thought maybe, hey, there's some fellas from way outer space coming to check us out, but I don't
okay.
know. But,
all right, well, look, that's as good a sighting as any, one much like the video. And the video is quite good. The video, without question, shows you detail, something you don't see in most UFO videos. It's not particularly fuzzy. It's quite clear. It gives you a reference, a building in front, to give you some idea of the size. And then, of course, at the very end, shoom, she's gone like that. Obviously, a real craft of some sort. You never know about these things. People are good with various Photoshops, and God knows they can knock them out in the movies, and they look very real. So it could be something like that. But assuming that it's legitimate photography, and I guess I do make that assumption, then it really is quite spectacular. You tell me what you think. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, hello. I've had several experiences over my lifetime.
Several?
It started in Central California. I lived in Fresno, and I was just sort of summoned to look up in the sky, and I looked up and saw a dot. And as soon as I saw this object, it disappeared. It was like it knew it had seen me, or I had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after that, I had a celestial visitation, and it was like a beautiful spirit. And I've kind of like had this strange feeling that they're connected, but it was a life-changing experience.
One of the things that Stanton's going to talk tonight about is a new book that's been written that really tears apart the people who have made claims like yours of a visitation or of being abducted or anything like that. I mean, it just totally trashes the whole thing as psychological gibberish.
I know. But the thing is, my sister, I slept on a top bunk, and she slept on a lower one, and she was deaf. And she said the light that came into the room scared her, and she put the pillow over her face.
Okay, so you've got a witness.
I have many witnesses. My sisters from another bedroom saw a bright light shining under the door from my room. So, and my sister, who was deaf, I was trying to explain to my mother the following day that what had happened to me and how I felt totally changed about, I wasn't just a regular kid anymore. I was more global. I thought if this was, I was a person in Africa, I would see it as a familiar form as a child in Africa. And I became very world, you know, conscious, and actually did end up traveling as a national person's wife to visit different countries. And then when I was in Hartford, I was going over to from Simsbury to have lunch with my husband, and I was like summoned to look up in the sky, and I looked up there, and there was a silver disc up there. As soon as I saw it, it dashed behind this only white cloud that was over the city.
When you said summoned to look into the sky, you mean you had some sort of mental pressure to look up?
Yeah, it's like, look up. You know, and the same as when I was in my backyard in Fresno. It's like, sometimes I think it's like, it monitors you. It has certain people that it's just keeping an eye on the world and making sure things are okay. And my son, we were driving through a valley. He was 17, very, very, doesn't believe in anything. And he just suddenly said, I just saw a flying saucer.
Hmm. Well, I guess it runs then in the family. Thank you very much. I just never know what to say to these things, and I'd probably be laughing except for the fact that I've seen two myself. You see, that changes you. As you know, and I'm not going to put you through the pain of repeating it, but my wife and I had a very, very close encounter. And when you've had that, after you've had it, there's simply no way to ignore, laugh at, or jest with regard to people who make claims like we're hearing tonight. Simple as that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I had an experience. Well, my wife and I had an experience involving some other people, and it's ironic. I've shared this experience with a little bit of an ongoing communication I've had with Stan Friedman myself, communication about my string theory that is consistent with biblical text. But anyway, it occurred. Unfortunately, you know, I never wrote down the date, but it occurred around the year 2000. My wife and I were returning from a late dinner, and we were traveling north along the ocean, which was directly to our right side, of course, and that was in North Ormond Beach in the Tomoka Park area on a two-lane highway. And my first irritant was this continual brake lights of the cars in front of me, well, the media car in front of me. And I would have to stop, reset cruise control, start again. And I was getting more and more irritated. But I was in a conversation with my wife at the time. And I started to notice the car in front of me, the driver was looking up out his driver's side window and looking upward. Well, at some point, I began to do the same.
Sure. And wondering what he's seeing.
Absolutely. And what I would see when I looked up was what I would think with my earthborn senses and rationality as first a helicopter, or it must be a blimp because it was apparently stationary. But then as the senses would kick in, I would realize there was no, this is about 100 feet above us, about 100 to, you know, 150 feet in diameter. It was round and it was dark. And what I could see were lights. And the thing that struck me next was there was no copter blade noise.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to see that this was motionless above us.
Well, the brain tries to make sense out of what doesn't make sense. So
exactly.
you try, you know, it's your brain is telling you, look, it has to be a helicopter or it has to be a blimp. It's sitting still.
Exactly. We're just trained that way with our earth senses. And so you try to come up with a quick explanation, you know, you're trying to continued driving. And at some point, I started to realize this large object, circular in its size and dimensions, it was had these lights. And I started to realize there's no Compton noise, and I had never seen a blimp. First of all, nothing can fly that close with the aeronautical laws, that close to the ground, immediately above the Route A1A, which is a two-lane highway that runs along the Atlantic Ocean. And then, of course, the blimps, if they do have any lights, generally they're around the square cabin.
Well, how did this end?
Okay, so the car is finally almost slowed to a stop. Everybody was following suit. They were looking out their windows. And then finally, speed was resumed. But as we looked behind us, it never moved from that spot. When I got home, I called 911. I looked in the newspaper the next day, saw nothing. But my wife and I talked about it. And, of course, I have my own beliefs. I absolutely believe that this is a life form, and it has its own vehicles. I believe...
You believe all that. All right, let me pepper you with a couple of questions.
Sure.
What do you believe they're doing here?
Well, first of all, I believe they're probably visiting their cousins. You see, because I have this string theory. That
meaning us?
Consistent with biblical text.
Okay, okay. We don't have time to get into all of that.
Okay,
but
I believe the Creator has created these, and it was an early model, a plain Jane, pencil neck geek, plain Jane model, not in the likeness of the Creator and not the apple of his eye as we are. And I believe these people perhaps were just...
Well, then how come they get the saucers and we get, you know, GM and Ford and stuff?
Well, because with their tenure as a life form in the universe,
so
they're
it's
the
tenure.
Early model.
It's tenure. All right, well, thank you very much. It's tenure then. See, the tenured guys get... you know, the nice, round, faster-than-light saucers, and we're stuck with cars, albeit a few newer models, but still cars. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Dan from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, Dan.
Yeah, I had a UFO experience. Actually, it was in October 2000, and it actually turned out how I learned about your show. But I was at a really remote location in south central Arizona at a hang gliding mountain that we fly at.
Ah, yes.
And this might ring a bell, but I was putting up some permanent wind streamers that our club had been putting up at sites. And I was down there by myself. Everybody else had left, and it was getting dark. And to the south of the mountain, about 15 miles, was Interstate 8 running to Yuma and San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw lights, and I thought they were helicopters. I thought there was a wreck maybe down on Interstate 8. So I didn't think anything of it. I kept walking around, you know, finishing up, getting ready to go home. And the lights started illuminating the top of a bluff just to the south of me. And I... Shortly after that, I realized these things were not helicopters. They were moving really sporadically. There were
right.
three of them.
Right.
And this went on for over an hour and 5 minutes is how long it lasted. And I was absolutely terrified. It got so scary. They were illuminating the ground below them. They were doing these gyrations that looked like a heart monitor, even going faster than a heart monitor.
Huh.
And that's when I realized it's like, there's no way that there could be a physical being in that ship without just the G-forces alone.
Would turn them to mush.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at one point, they started coming over to me. There were farm fields in between us, and they were lighting up the farm fields, and they were coming right at me.
Well, that's quite a sighting.
Yeah, and I jumped in my truck, and I wrote a note down. I thought I was going to get... you know, taken away, and I turned around, and they were headed back, and...
Oh, I see. You were going to sort of write a final goodbye note?
Yeah, yeah.
What were you going to say?
I've still got the letter. I wrote down my name, Southside, Oatman Mountain, UFOs. I wrote down the time.
Wow.
And I just, I was on the back of a banking statement with a felt pen. I was just in a total panic.
I hear you. So you thought this was like your final note to the world.
Yeah. I had not turned on the truck or the lights or anything because I was so terrified. And then one of my friends asked me, and this is where, you know, I didn't know hardly anything about any UFO activity or anything at this time. I was pretty green because I'd like, you know, I wasn't listening to your show or really into that at that time. But I just had a sense of fear that was unlike anything I had ever experienced. I can't even explain how scared I was.
You want to take a shot at telling me what you think was inside those craft? I mean,
I was
aliens?
I've always tried to be really objective about it, and I honestly can't say one way or the other whether it was aliens or human, something that we've developed that's hidden, but I do know without a doubt in my mind that it was either the craft was driven by either anti-gravity or what you've talked about on some of your other shows with turning it into zero mass.
Yes,
because just the G-forces, like I was saying, would
alone
rip without some way of controlling gravity mass.
Yeah. What about the old swamp gas thing or something akin to that? No, huh?
No way, because it was lighting up. It would illuminate like maybe a quarter square mile at a time when you could see the swirl cactuses.
Was it as though it was looking for something?
Yeah, and actually that's what my friend asked me. They said, what do you think it was doing there? And I just had this sense, and I didn't even know why I said it, but I said it almost seemed, the feelings I had, I felt like it was almost searching for either something in the ground or searching for souls. And I don't know why. I couldn't explain it. Everybody thought I was weird.
Searching for souls.
That's just what it felt like.
Doesn't it bother you a little then that it didn't grab you?
No, that doesn't bother me. I'm damn glad it didn't.
Well, I understand, but I mean, I'm not saying you're soulless, but I mean, if it was really searching for souls.
Well, where it was, right to the south of me where it was,
yes,
was on the Gila Riverbed, and that was where there used to be old Indian villages there. And the mountain I was on, and a lot of the little mountains around there, are covered with petroglyphs.
Mm.
So that's kind of what made me think. It's like it was down there hovering around where the old Indian villages used to be.
Well, you're sure not the first person to drop that soul reference with regard to ufology.
Yeah.
That's something John Lear talked an awful lot about, disturbingly.
Yeah, and I thought of that before I'd ever even listened to your show or even knew anything about it. So that's what strikes me as being so odd at this time.
Maybe that's why, thank you very much, there is so much interest from the religious world, the religious community in ufology. Maybe that's why the Catholic Church ran over all kinds of obstacles, you know, people complaining about the environmental impact and so forth, to get a telescope up in a mountain in Arizona to look for what? You've got to wonder, what is the Catholic Church looking for? And what about this connection between the religious world and ufology?